You're listening to 101.5 FM The Hawk. I'm Mary, and tonight you're listening to my show, Dangerfield. My guest is Bri Webb. Bri Webb is a Canadian singer and songwriter, best known as the lead vocalist for his band, The Constantines. He's also had a band called Harbor Coats, and as well, Bri Webb and The Providers. So welcome to the show, Bri.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, Mary.
Cool. Well, why don't we kick off the show with a recent song of yours that you put out by your band, The Constantines. It's called Call Me Out. So we'll play that and then we'll come back and we'll chat a little bit. Okay.
Sounds good to me.
An object in the middle of an empty room. There is a subject in the place between me and you. But I don't want you to worry. Where I go in that evil hour, I'm on the dial here at my station, trying to figure out what runs on that essential power. Behold the brute degeneration. Old questions in the blood. The light that falls on you is the only light. I can't see the way I should. Wanna talk about it? If you wake up and wonder why I'm not at your side, you'll find me sitting in the dark, trying to understand the light. Though my friend might measure my love by the time I take, still my eyes betray me at the end of every day. On the ladder, holding it down halfway home. That leaves the rest of us descending in the dust while sleeping on the stove. Thank you.
was Call Me Out by The Constantines. And tonight, my guest on Dangerfield on 101.5 FM The Hawk is Bri Webb, lead singer of that band. So, Bri, you put out this song this year, and I know that you donated the proceeds of it to Black Lives Matter and as well as a legal fund for land defenders. What made you put out this song at this time this year? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, it had been 12 years maybe or 11 years since the Constantines put out new music, really. And we were very active in the kind of the aughts, you know, up until about 2011, or 2010. And then we took a break, played our last show in Dawson City, in the Yukon, at a festival there. And, I guess that was 2010. And then we, took a little informal hiatus, sort of open-ended and focused on our own lives, for a bit. And then in 2014, we started playing together again. And that was incredibly fun. And we did a bunch of shows across the country and played a bit in the States again, and got to see a lot of friends we hadn't seen in a while. And then, I mean, we kind of started realizing or talking about how it was sort of BS to just play old songs and to not be creating any new stuff, you know? And so we started writing, just, we tried to be as low pressure about it as we could. And we would get together at our old rehearsal space in Kensington Market, under Paul's Boutique, the instrument shop there. We used to just have, that was our space forever. And then, now they rent it out, but they rented it to us for a few rehearsals, and we started writing. And we just took our time, and some things came out of it. I think we wrote maybe six new songs. And in the last few years that we were actively playing, like I think 2017, maybe 2018, we were playing those songs live a lot. And we recorded them just over the course of a weekend. We just did sort of live off the floor, everything live, at Palace Sound in Toronto. And that Call Me Out was one of the songs that we recorded that weekend. And it was fun. The other songs, I think, like everything was just sort of really quick to try and lay things down and see how they sounded recorded. And that one I thought turned out best. I think everyone was sort of on board with that, but we just sat on it for a while. It happened. And then we got busy with our own lives again and didn't really think about those recordings for a bit. And then, you know, this year, COVID hit, and the world changed, and then George Floyd killing happened, and that, you know, called attention to police targeting of people of color, and maybe matters that I'm not the person who should be best addressing, but you know, that certainly represented incredible injustice and that needed to be faced up to, you know, as individuals and as communities and as a civilization. So I think when the riots and the protests, I should say, happened, or started to happen, and Black Lives Matter were actively addressing, you know, legal support for people that were fighting this injustice. It started to dawn on us that we could maybe just put something out to help raise money, and not, it wasn't really anything other than that. I mean, the song, I think, is a song about facing up to your own BS, you know, the stuff that you need to work through to be a better and more responsible person, and also just being willing to be called out for that stuff, you know, like as part of the process. And so that seemed to be a good sentiment to put out maybe at that time as well. So yeah, we didn't, you know, put it out through a label or anything. We just put it out on Bandcamp. Didn't send it to Spotify or any of the streaming services. We just we put it up there with a suggested donation, I think, of $2. And people were incredibly generous and continue to be. We continue getting donations up to this week. And so we've split the funding between Black Lives Matter Toronto and the Land Defenders Fund, for Indigenous Land Defenders operating at West. So those seemed like two intertwined kind of causes fighting for justice in the country right now. So that was the idea. Yeah, that's the long version.
Awesome. That's like really good background. And for those that want to donate to that after hearing it on this show, you can find that on, it's under Constantine's Call Me Out, and it's on Bandcamp.
Yeah.
Brad, didn't you also do the artwork that you see on the website there? For the
I did. Thank you for noticing. I don't usually, like, I was never the one really to do the layout and design stuff for the cons. It was typically Dallas Worley, who plays bass in the band, is a great visual artist and kinetic sculptor and makes really great work. And so he always did our graphic design for the albums. But we were just trying to do this very, like, the idea kind of came to put this out, and it happened really quickly. And I just had an idea for that cover that was rather simple, but has the sort of grill cloth from my old Fender Super 6 amp, and then the name spelled out in flowers, which, I don't know, just seemed like a nice visual presentation for the song.
And so you have, for two of your solo albums, you've got Provider and Free Will. I'm just thinking about the artwork on those albums. It's kind of like a similar, can you talk about that a little bit? It's like a similar pattern, but it almost looks like it's a different color treatment.
I guess it's true. I hadn't thought about that, but it's definitely, it sort of connects aesthetically. I'm a big fan of cutout aesthetics, like things that look actually physically, you know, cut out of magazines and whatever material. But so that the album design for my solo records was done with Alex Durlach, who is half of Idéfix Records with Jeff McMurrick. And that stuff was like this, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a cutout technology that for some reason is escaping me right now, but just a way of punching out, you know, letters uniformly from like a cardstock or a, you know, in that case the album cover. So what we did is just, it was all marbling these two layers, and so the actual cover of both of those records, the lettering is all cut out, and so whatever's underneath it kind of comes through. And it's funny, I wasn't even thinking that when I did the Call Me Out cover, but it's definitely the similar idea. Yeah, something about cutouts really speaks to me.
and you also do, like, you've done screen printing and stuff before, right? So is that a skill that you just kind of taught yourself, or is that something that you were shown, or how did you get into that?
I think I learned it when some friends were doing it in, you know, early cons days, maybe even before that. Like I grew up in punk rock and hardcore scenes in London, Ontario, and there was very much a DIY spirit, you know, involved in that. So as part of making records or making, just making a band, being a band, you made your own shirts. And it was just cheaper. And I mean, I think to me that the idea, the central idea for punk rock is kind of the most economical use of resources. Using your resources in the best possible way. Particularly limited resources. So, touring with five people in a 1979 Ford Fairmont across the country, or making your own shirts and your own posters and your own, album covers. And I mean, it wasn't an idea that was new to the world, but in the 90s, it was very much a new and exciting thing in Ontario.
And do you have any kind of stuff still from those days? Like, do you have any old shirts or posters or anything like that?
I think I do. I used to be more into kind of collecting that stuff. Although I found in the last 10 years, I just haven't been inclined to hold on to as much. I guess it's all somewhere. It's probably in our attic here in Guelph, but from way back, I used to make like scrapbooks even of like tours and things, just weird little photo albums of adventures that bands would go on. But, and I'm sure I have posters from maybe the first shows of bands and that kind of stuff, but I'm not so much into, holding on to this stuff anymore. I guess as I'm getting older, I'm just finding that it's more to carry around, and I have the memories and the connections with people still, it is nice to see that stuff. And I think maybe I'll go full circle and get to a point where I want to revisit that stuff or go through it, make my kid look at it. but for now, I don't know. I'm not as inclined to gather that stuff. I think I'm more in the letting go stage of my life.
Well, let's listen to a song of yours. I was just thinking about album art and thinking about how, I think it was maybe 2014-ish. Was that when you put out your Live at Massey Hall record, or was it later? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right. 2014.
The album art is like 3D, and it came with 3D glasses, right?
Yeah. That was Seth and Paul from out east. Both musicians from Halifax. Seth Smith, who's part of Dog Day and made the film Low Life, and is really a great musical artist and visual artist as well. And then Paul,
because I wanted to play the song Low Life off of the Massey Hall set list.
So nice, cool.
Maybe we'll play that and then we'll come back and we'll chat a little bit more. This is Bri Webb and you're listening to 101.5 FM The Hawk. We're going to listen to live from Massey Hall, the song called Low Life.
Danger, going straight.
way, stranger. Low, low, low life. They come to low. Have I done for no? But I love you, you deserve better. I want to cut their tether from you. Thank you. My name is Bri Webb. I live in Guelph, Ontario. It's a nice place to raise a kid.
All right.
That was Low Life by Bri Webb and the Providers from their show at Massey Hall. So, Bri, at what point did you decide that you were going to record that album or record that show and turn it into an album? Was that planned, or did you record the show and then hear it back and then decide to make it an album?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think we released Free Will. Edie Fix released Free Will, the like studio album, and then shortly after that came out. I got an offer from Massey Hall to play, and they were doing this series of shows where the price of admission was less. You know, it was the date of their opening and original opening, and it was like, you know, Timber Tambor did did one of them, and Jennifer Castle's done one, and the Weather Station, and you know, they just had a really incredible list of. People of Destroyer as well did an amazing solo one, and so the price was cheap, and they would pair two artists together and do a night at Massey Hall. And I mean, you know, as with many Canadian born musicians, Canadian musicians, I dreamed of playing Massey Hall. It's it's an iconic venue in the country. And so when I got the offer, I mean, that was just, I was over the moon. And it gave me a chance to get, it kind of pushed me to get this band together with a few new people and friends that I hadn't played music with yet, like Aaron Goldstein, Anna Ruddick, Tom Hamerton. We played a little bit, and then Nathan Lahr and Rich Burnett, who I'd been playing a bit with in the years previous. So we just I put together this like fantasy band of like super great players that were really able to, you know, open up the songs and jam and you know, change the album versions of the songs into something that was even more alive and changing. So that band came together as the providers, and then we did that show. And part of that deal was that they beautifully film it. Mitch from Southern Souls, I think, was a big part of that filming process. And Colin Medley, an old friend. And so anyway, they film it and then they record it, multi-track audio, and they give you all that material afterwards. And up until that point, if you had played at Massey Hall, like for union stuff and everything, it was very complicated, I think, to record and release an album from there. But this was part of this deal of performing in part of that series. So yeah, they paid us well, and they gave us this amazing recording. And I think Jeff McMurrick, particularly from Idée Fixe, you know, is a big fan of Neil Young, and it just meant a lot to release a Live at Massey Hall record. And the fact that we got to document that band playing together in that way was such a win. Yeah. So yeah, we put it out.
That was a special show. I remember I was at that show. It was really, really great. Did you not also have an experience with being backed by, was it the Toronto Symphony?
No, it was the Massey Hall Big Band, they called it. So we did this, yeah, that's funny. It was such a brief and amazing honor too, but we, that was part of a vision of what was happening at Massey Hall at the time. They wanted to create this big band of like really eclectic and amazing players. I can't even begin to name everyone that was involved. Right? Yeah, really heavy, like, you know, full horns and vibes player. Nick Frazier was on drums, and Kyle Brunder was the saxophonist, was kind of the band leader, I believe, or coordinator, and he's amazing. Anyways, so they put that together, and then they arranged a few performances doing versions of an artist's songs, and I get to be one of those performers. So we did a show at Roy Thompson Hall, like their kind of outdoor patio with the fountain and everything that sort of lowered from street level. So we played outside in the middle of the summer and had this, again, like heavy hitter band that just played these like big elaborate versions, arrangements of these songs I had written on acoustic guitar, you know.
It was pretty wild. Like, was it the kind of thing where they took the song away for a while and then like you had a couple of meetings of it, or like were you involved in the arrangement, or how did that work?
It was so bizarre, but they took the songs and worked on them almost entirely. Like, they just picked songs they wanted to do. Kyle checked in with me a couple times just about the song choices, but then I went and we met, I think, once. We had one rehearsal the week before the show, and we just did it, and they were amazing. And then we did the show, and that was it. And we did another one a little bit later at the Rivoli, I think. Where they were performing, they were doing like a series of performances there. But yeah, it was, what an experience. I mean, just to see where people took the songs. There were, you know, some of them they had taken like huge wandering like compositional trips in the middle of the songs, and it was just incredible to see what people did with those things.
That's awesome. Yeah. For those just joining, you're listening to 101.5 FM The Hawk, a show called Dangerfield. I'm Mary, and my guest tonight is Bri Webb from Bri Webb and the Providers, Constantines, and more. So Bri, when you've been on a couple different labels. So you mentioned Ide Fixes, the current mm-hmm. label for your solo work. You were on Sub Pop, which is super cool. And then, but you started with a label called Three Gut for the Constantines. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of a pretty innovative label. Can you talk about how you came to be on that label and what that process was like?
Yeah. So Three Gut Records was run by Lisa Moran and Tyler Clark Burke, who I think at some point had both lived in Guelph. I'm not sure about Lisa, but there was this connection with Guelph musicians. They put out, I think their first album was Jim Guthrie's 1,000 Songs. And they put out, you know, the Royal City albums, which has the obvious Guelph connection. But they had, I think when the label had started, they had all moved to Toronto, and including like Royal City, Jim, and Tyler and Lisa. And Tyler was doing these wild, elaborate parties in Toronto, like heaven and hell, and like just these, like in these warehouses in Toronto that would have, you know, very elaborate decorations and just be these incredible events. And then they decided, I think they put this label together, and part of it was like Lisa's kind of vision for how to market a label and how to help bands. And then Tyler's kind of vision of like how to present everything in an artistic way. So like when they would have, you know, release shows for a band, Tyler would like recruit a bunch of the kind of Three Gut family to hang up envelopes on lines across College Street, and people, you know, instead of putting up posters, people would grab envelopes and there'd be an invitation to this show. You know, just sort of really fun, imaginative ways of presenting music. And they had great parties, and we would, you know, everyone, I think at some point lived in the Three Gut house or, you know, stayed there certainly. And, that was kind of behind Much Music there, on, St. Pat or across on St. Patrick Square. But, yeah, so it was a really nice family feeling, you know, good sense of community. And I moved from Guelph to Toronto reluctantly. I was happy living in a smaller town, but the rest of the cons had moved to Toronto, and so I moved, and it was just so good to have this feeling of a community of artists and creative people to connect with. And that's so Three Gut continued to be that for over 5 years, I think, and put out amazing records by Oneida, Gentleman Reg, Cuff the Duke, Sea Snakes. Yeah, it was a great label.
And then what was it like when your band Constantines joined Sub Pop? Because Sub Pop's pretty legendary American record label, like home to, I'm sure, a lot of people's influences and idols. What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, the thing with that period of the Constantines was that I think like every week, at least, we would get a message or a call from Tyler or Lisa with some news that just blew our minds. We were trying to play as much as possible, and you know, we were getting to start traveling and touring and playing music across Canada and the States. And I think just because of Tyler and Lisa's work promoting us, some folks from Sub Pop, Chris and Sean, these guys were in Toronto and came to a show that we played at Lee's Palace. And then I think the next week we got a message that they were interested in talking about making our next record, being involved with them. And yeah, I mean, it seemed completely surreal, having grown up, you know, on music from Sub Pop throughout the 90s. And I mean, that's such a formative label for me and for the rest of the guys in the band. So it was really unbelievable for that to happen. And a big part of it for us was that they were willing to be our label outside of Canada, and Three Gut could remain our label in Canada, so we could have that, we could continue that relationship. So it was a really amazing collaborative effort to release records with both labels. And Sub Pop was kind of this wild, strange family too. What I think with Sub Pop, we always felt like the younger, dorkier brothers. Like everybody there was like the cooler, older sibling. So we would just show up and like raid their promo closet and get some free albums, and then just like sit and listen to stories from the folks there who had been there since, you know, the early 90s.
I remember hearing a story. I feel like it was when you were on their label, and it must have been one of their big anniversaries and of being a label. And I remember hearing how they did something with like the top of the Space Needle where they like turned it into what looked like a Sub Pop record or something like that.
I think they've done that where they made it look like a 45, but they also, that was the Sub Pop 20th. It's become such a part of the cultural fabric of Seattle we showed up for the 20th anniversary festival and the Space Needle was flying the Sub Pop flag.
So maybe let's listen to another song of yours. Let's put on a song from, what do we want to hear here? Why don't we put on a song off of Free Will? Let's listen to Big Smoke and then we'll come back and we'll chat a little bit more, okay?
Sounds good.
Heavy air did me in, and what I carried from it. How to fight the game trail when the sun goes down upon it. Lately, every waking hour, it's a church house of wonder. Which direction is man developed? Which flag am I walking under? When the spoon miss our mouths, when I'm full of lacking, when seeing death in misgivings, when our souls are sinking, we'll dress only in linens and make peace at our beginnings and never damn a single thing. Was a dog working as a seeing eye, reckoning on the reasons why a man would let a drug define his mind and body, define their fates, the first call. Ask for animal reckoning, an angle bed with ancient purpose. My people, well-meaning. When the drugs take their toll, when our ears start ringing, when the sky and the skull come collected, we'll dress only in linens and make peace at our beginnings and never damn a single thing. Never damn a single thing. Walk in love and often sing. Death to our misgivings. Oh, 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 oh,
that was Big Smoke by Bri Webb. You're listening to 101.5 FM The Hawk. Bri is my guest tonight on the show. So Bri, you have a long history with community radio. I think you've been involved in radio for, I think it's like over two decades. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely over 20 years, like since maybe 96, 97.
And how did you get involved in it? And how did you get involved in it?
I grew up in London, Ontario, and London is kind of a sort of like an old money, like relatively conservative town. I mean, it's like the insurance capital of Canada, I think, you know, London Life and stuff. And I mean, it also, I think as part of that, had an incredible music scene, you know, great punk rock bands and metal bands, and throughout the 90s there was a really vibrant and eclectic kind of music scene there that you know, everybody was just going out to shows, and it was incredible. But I was also going, I went to university at University of Western Ontario, and that's a pretty like a relatively conservative school. Like it's the Ivy School of Business. And I think there's a lot of like frat culture and stuff. I don't know how it is these days really, but that was the vibe at the time. And I just had no social connection to the school at all. I would go to class, and I was studying English literature and sociology, and I had great professors and that, but just did not connect with any kind of social life at that school. And then a friend of mine introduced me to CHRW, which was the campus community station at Western. And I had heard it, like I used to listen to punk rock shows on that station when I was in high school, but I didn't make the connection until this friend introduced me. And I ended up getting I was really immersed in the music scene, and I got the job of music director at that station in like 97, 98. And that just opened my worldview. It opened up my eyes and my ears to so many new artists and new forms of music that I didn't know about. I was going to even more shows and just traveling around Ontario, going to shows, going to Detroit and going to see bands. And then also just meeting people who were obsessed with weird music and weird art and culture. And so that, yeah, it changed my life. I was completely depressed at the time as well. And it really gave me a sense of purpose and joy, you know, about being alive. So I did that for a few years. And right at the end of that, we decided to start playing. Doug McGregor, the drummer, and I, who had played in old hardcore bands together, started to talk about playing in a band again. And we knew Dallas and Steve from other bands in Kitchener and Cambridge and Guelph. And so that was around when we started the Constantines in 1999. And so I left my job at CHRW, moved to Guelph, and just made music for a while. And then around 2010, I was living in Montreal, and my wife Katie and I decided we were going to try and have a baby, and we decided to relocate to Guelph. And I'd been touring a lot for the previous decade and needed to make some changes and kind of find something more stable and that would allow me to have a job close to home. And I applied to a job at CFRU in Guelph and got that job as the program director there. And I was there for about 10 years, maybe 9.5, and worked as the program director and the operations coordinator there. And it was an amazing place to work. Really incredible people. And last year, I started to look for other possibilities, just for personal reasons, was looking for some other, looking to make a change. And the position of technologist at the Hawk in Hamilton at Mohawk College opened up, and I applied for that and got that job last August. And so for the last year, I've been working here at the Hawk, and it's been incredible. It's much more immersed in the academics because it's part of the radio program here. So I had an academic position here and worked closely with the students over the last year. But it has been such a wild year, as we all know. And yeah, we went from, in class, lots of students hanging out in the station every day and this kind of wonderful energy there, to like the COVID shutdown, where we had to figure out how to get everybody recording shows from home and producing and trying to figure out how I could support the hosts that way. So it's been an interesting year to, I love technical challenges and figuring out how to make media making more accessible to people through technology. So even though this has been a pretty stressful year to run a radio station, it's been an amazing experience figuring out how to do it in the COVID era.
And so that's super interesting. Thanks for sharing that. So a question I just thought of. So given all the touring that you used to do, so I'm sure that you did Canada a million times. You had your, forays into the States a bunch. You went to Europe a bunch. Did you find that when you were traveling in a band that you would come across different stations in your travels, and then would you kind of keep them in mind when you came back, or was there like, what was it like? Because I remember, I'll just give a quick example. I remember when my sister and I went to Los Angeles once, and we were driving there from somewhere else, and we had one of those things where you listen to I think you play your music through an empty radio station. It was like a way to play your iPod or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember when we got to LA, we couldn't even find like an empty spot.
Yes. Yeah.
So many radio stations. And
yeah.
Whereas up here, like, that doesn't happen. And so what's that like for you when you go to other areas and that process of kind of discovering, new music or new stations?
Yeah. I mean, I've really been in love with radio since I was a kid. I mean, my dad used to copy songs onto cassettes that my sister and I liked when we were kids and make mixtapes for us from the radio. Like, I remember him sitting in our living room with headphones on, making these tapes. And then when I was a bit older, I remember hearing on Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell, an incredible, show about like the supernatural and conspiracy theories and just all this weird underground stuff that is in people's minds and beliefs across the US. And so that was on and syndicated across the US. It came like from a Detroit station. I could get it. I remember my grandparents' place. I would listen to it if I was staying there. And so that station was really formative, just in terms of what radio can do. And then, yeah, traveling was incredible because you would, go and play a show in Detroit, for example. And instead of like dialing through and kind of hearing Canadian classic rock or something on the radio, you'd suddenly hear like a R&B and soul station, that had been operating since, Motown era, you know, or before, like that broke those artists, and or driving through like Memphis and the same kind of thing, like just hearing stations that were so steeped in the cultural fabric or the cultural value of that, those regions, you know, that really blew my mind. And then, you know, we got to play at places like KEXP in Seattle when we passed through there because of the Sub Pop connection. And the one that really blew my mind, again, drew my attention back to kind of campus and community stations was WFMU in New Jersey. And their programming is just, you know, it's one of those stations where you'll tune in and typically not hear anything you've heard before. And so, I mean, that, you know, they're everywhere. And I love particularly community radio because it resists the centralized kind of formatting of commercial radio. You know, it can be strange and express the uniqueness of a region or a city.
Do you listen to like world radio at all, like through the internet, like overseas radio?
Yeah. I think that's been an amazing thing with like app development. Like people have made some incredible like ways of just finding, you know, radio makers around the world. But there's a thing called Radio Garden, an app called Radio Garden, where it gives you a globe and you can spin the globe and just, you know, zoom in on an area and it'll link you to every active station in that area. And I do that a lot. There's another one called, it's just a website. It's called Radio. So I think it's got like four or five R's before it, but you can go and plug in a decade, a country, and weird, fast or slow. Yeah. And then it'll create this playlist of music from that part of the world. It's not exactly radio because it's curated in a new way. And I'm fascinated by the way people are using technology, like I said, to create.
Yeah, I heard about a project recently where it was people were doing that with the sounds of where they live. Like it was an art project where people would
record recording.
Yeah, like is that what it's called? Or
ambient kind of recording, like sound recordings from their area. Yeah,
birds outside, but it was like, or the city traffic. And so someone was compiling like an art project of like a global, like it was less music but more kind of sound, I guess. But
that's great.
So I guess we're kind of running out of time because I want to make sure that we play some songs. One thing I want to talk about. So you have a really cool cover that you did with Feist of a Kenny Rogers song, right?
Yeah. Bee Gees song originally, but yeah, Kenny and Dolly Islands in the Stream. Yeah.
So maybe let's listen to that. And did you, how did you end up working with Feist? I think you played on a whole album of hers.
I sang on the Metals album on the song The Bad in Each Other, and played, I got to tour with her on that album. She was a friend of Tyler Burke's, and that's how I met her originally. And I've just been a fan of her music forever. I think she's one of the most interesting musical artists and songwriters operating these days. And so I had taken a break, you know, when our kid was born, Asa, I just wasn't, you know, going to be touring or anything like that. And I stopped making music and I wasn't really thinking about it. And then she asked me to sing on this album and the song. And it really kind of kicked me out of my, my quiet period. And it got me making music again. And I, you know, I made the Provider album, and then she took me on tour across the country, and it was incredible.
Let's listen to that song and then we'll come back. Okay.
Yep.
Baby, when I met you, there was peace unknown. I set out to get you. something to me that I can't explain. Pull me closer and I feel no pain. Every beat in my heart, we got something going on. Tender love's blind, requires a dedication. All this love we feel needs no conversation. We ride it together, making love with each other, Islands in the stream, that is what we are. No one in between, how can we be wrong? Sailing with me to another world.
That was Allen's in the Stream with Feist and Bri Webb. You're listening to 101.5 FM The Hawk. Bri's my guest tonight. So Bri, before we wrap it up, I guess just wanted to ask, are you working on any new music lately? You mentioned before that you put out, you know, one of a new Khan songs. What about your solo stuff? Do you have anything in the works?
I have songs. I haven't I've been focused on it. I've really just been, a few years ago, I just decided to kind of slow down and, you know, look at the space I was taking up, or I'd been fortunate and allowed to take up, I guess, in the last 20 years, music making. And so I've just focused my energy on trying to help other people share their voices through media making, through, you know, radio, community radio and recording. And I've got stuff. I just haven't been thinking about it as much, but so, I mean, I'm right now transitioning out of my role at the Hawk, and the wonderful Marie Cassidy is coming in and taking over there. And I'm going to be returning to my, my job at CFRU here, 'cause I just needed to be closer to home. And I'm going to miss the Hawk immensely, and I think there's incredible programming happening here, and I'm so grateful for all the people who are making shows and for everyone who helped me out over the last year here. I'm going to miss it hugely, but there's a nice collaboration between the Hawk and CFRU where we're airing each other's programming, and I'm hoping that that collaboration can continue, so I'll still be connected here somehow. But yeah, I mean, if you want to hear some of the stuff that I curated, I guess over my time here, the Morning Soul Shakeup is a show that runs every morning from 8-9 a.m. on the Hawk, and then there's the Night Hawk, which is midnight to 4 a.m. and it's just sort of rare vintage music that's on, and you can hear sort of some of the stuff that I love and wanted to share with the Hamilton community.
Well, I also want to say thank you, Bri, for giving me this opportunity for this show, because it's been a wonderful learning experience and a great challenge and a great, just a great experience all overall. So thank you for that.
My pleasure. I mean, I'm a big fan.
We're going to sign off now, but I just wanted to say thanks so much for being on the show. That was Bri Webb. You were listening to 101.5 FM The Hawk in Dangerfield. So have a great night, Bri, okay?
Thanks very much, Mary.
Okay, bye.
Bye.